Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
All right, Kel, thanks so much. Welcome to Closing Bell on this Friday. I'm Scott Wapner, live from Post 9 here at the New York Stock Exchange. And this make-or-break hour begins with the run to record highs. Probably won't get there today, but sure looks like that's the direction in which we are heading. We're going to ask our experts over this final stretch how far this bull run can go. In the meantime, your scorecard with 60 minutes to go in regulation looks just like that. It's been a mixed day for the majors. We are all green across the board for the week, and that's the important part. Remember, we closed above 5,200 for the first time in a year yesterday, and we're hanging out there now. Utilities, financials, they are among the standouts this week. Yields are up a bit, too, on some hawkish-leaning Fed speak, and we're going to get to that in a minute as well. It does take us to our talk of the tape, the rally, just how resilient this market can remain. Let's bring in Kevin Gordon, Charles Schwab. It's good to see you. Welcome back. It's been a minute.
Nice to see you.
So, this market's just been incredible. It's been resilient in the face of so much, theoretically. It's had this nice bounce back. What should we make from it?
You know, I think what's nice is that through this mini pullback correction, whatever you want to call it, from late March to mid-April, you removed frothy sentiment as a pretty big risk. And that had been a risk from, call it mid-November up until March, where you had seen indicators both on the behavioral and the attitudinal side that had gotten way into excessive optimism territory. But of course, as we know from history, that can happen for a while until you get a negative catalyst to tip you over. That negative catalyst, I would argue, probably ended up being inflation, a little bit of this reacceleration that we saw in the first quarter. But now that you've taken that back, earnings season for the most part has generally been pretty good, maybe less good on the sales side. Mm-hmm. But overall, I think there have been enough catalysts to kind of keep you in this uptrend and sort of that broader picture going back to late October and the late October low of 2023 keeps you in this uptrend.
The key catalyst, if we want to call it that, I think everybody is sort of coalescing around the idea that the Fed chair changed the game at the meeting. He was not nearly as hawkish as some had feared he would be.
Yeah.
And that's really why we find ourselves now where we are.
I have a little bit of a different view, only because if you look at the shift in market expectations that we've seen, you know, a lot. I mean, there's been so much whiplash since the end of last year when you really started to get favorable readings on inflation metrics. You know, whether you're looking at it at a 3-6 month annualized change basis, everything was pointing in the direction of right at 2%, maybe sub 2%. But if you go back to some of the commentary from Powell himself, December and January, you know, there was no major pivot. I know that in the SEP, there was an indication that on average, Fed officials were expecting three cuts this year. But even Powell himself back in January said, we're not going to declare victory. It's premature.
Sure.
So I say all that to say and to sort of reaffirm the point that it's not the Fed that has really changed its tune. It's just the market that's had to adjust.
Well, let's discuss that. OK, we had these hotter than expected inflation reads and we had a bad GDP read. So, you know, all of a sudden we're sitting there. OK, now, you know, are we going to get any cuts at all? Is he going to come out at the news conference and be really hawkish? And is that going to be a problem? Or now we have to worry about stagflation. So he comes out and he says more hikes, unlikely, uses that word, right? Highly unlikely.
Right.
No stag, no flation.
Right.
Yields come down. Yields are down considerably since that day. Stocks are up. I mean, it's directly correlated.
But if you look actually from at the point that the market started to aggressively, you know, sort of price in cuts up to 7, if you want to go through that period from, you know, sort of late fall into the end of the year, and at sort of the max point, I guess, was January of this year when you got to 7. At that point, yeah, that had coincided with some weakness because you had the correction last year from late July to late October. Then, of course, with the turn in yields, that helped propel stocks in the opposite direction. But since then, as we've gone from pricing in 7 to maybe just 1, now to maybe 2, the market's still rallied. So that's a disconnect there where I don't think that the market is purely just trading off what the Fed is going to do this year.
No,
because
let me
we
tell
also
you something.
Don't know the
if he had come out, if he had come out and said, or even gave you the glimmer that another hike was on the table, we would not be where we are.
But they've always entertained that as an option.
But the way that he came out and wasn't nearly as hawkish as some feared has to be a considerable part of the story. And so does the sector performance. Let's just take this week.
Yeah.
Utilities are leading the way, 4.5%. Financials, materials, industrials. You telling me those sectors would not be leading
this market. If rates were still 20 to 25 basis points higher where they were around Fed Day, and he was hawkish. There's no way.
But even if you look at the leadership profile since late March, I mean, you look at what's been leading, late February, early March, that's really when you started to see a shift where technology kind of took a step back, hasn't really participated as much since then. But the three top performing sectors since that time, since the beginning of March, have been utilities, energy, communication services. So that's a traditional defensive area, that's a traditional sort of deep value area, and that's a growth area that are all leading. I'm not really sure what the market's message is there. So it's not a clear cyclical risk-on tone, but it's not a clear all-in defensive tone either. I think that's consistent with where we are in this part of the cycle where nobody's really sure how much of a reacceleration in inflation is to be believed, whether we start to turn lower from here. That brings cuts back on the table for the Fed. But now you also reintroduce a little bit more on the labor weakness side and the consumer weakness side where, you know, I don't think that we're in dire straits right now because of one jobs report that got you down to 175 in payrolls. The unemployment rate ticked up a little bit. You had a weaker claims number this week. It's not enough to make a trend, but you reintroduce some of that and it fits with at least how we think about the Fed cutting potentially, which is inflation and disinflation, the trend sets the stage, I think, for them to be able to cut. But what ultimately probably pushes them towards cutting, and a lot more members have mentioned this, is weakness in the labor market, if the unemployment rate was to gain more momentum to the upside.
You know, we had a special event, really, in the last hour, an exclusive with President Schoolsby and Kashkari with Steve Leisman up in Minneapolis. Steve's with us now. I wanted to catch you before you got on your plane to come back, because I thought this was significant, Steve, in that, you know, it almost feels like now the Fed chair's on the island. And almost everyone who's coming out, certainly today, and there have been many, who definitely have a more hawkish tone, certainly Kashkari.
Yeah, well, I think the way to think about that, Scott, is you follow the data. And I think what you're talking about, just to set the whole scene, you talk short end because you know the news like the back of your hand. But so in case people were watching, Logan came out, Bowman came out, said she didn't think they should cut rates this year. Logan asking the question, maybe the Fed is not tight enough. That's from Dallas. And then we had Kashkari on, who says, you know what? Let's just listen to what he had to say. And the good news here is he's not talking rate hikes. So let's hear what he is talking about.
If we get concerning inflation data continued, we're going to sit where we are for an extended period of time. I mean, I think that that's the default, that we don't feel compelled. If the labor market stays strong, we don't have to do anything. Right. And we can stay here as long as needed.
Now, I don't think Austin Goolsbee's viewpoint is any different from that, given the scenario. Where Austin might be a little different, kind of picking up what Gordon was talking about, is he seems to have a little bit more optimism that inflation is going to work itself out. He will keep reminding you that we had an historic decline in the inflation rate last year. Obviously not the price level, but the rate of inflation came down, Scott, very precipitously. Mm-hmm. And he's a little bit more optimistic. He does not accept the idea that we're in this kind of last tougher mile of inflation. He seems to expect that the inflation progress of last year can and should continue this year.
I also, to be honest, was struck by the issue of rents, right? The Fed chair at the meeting had you believe, and he said it numerous times, that he believes it's a, you know, lagging indicator, that rents are going to come down, and he sounded pretty confident in that. If you listen to these two gentlemen with you today, man, they almost talked as if it's a leading indicator to them still, that the stickiness there, or as I think it was Mr. Kashkari pointed out, the tick up in new leases gets him a little bit worried. So I wonder if we have differing perspectives on that.
Well, you're 100% right to point that out. Look, whether it's leading or lagging, the Fed can't get there from here if indeed housing inflation is not going to fall. That is a prerequisite for the Fed getting back to that 2% inflation level. If it's going to remain at 5, 6, 7%, it's not going to happen on the 2% target. So therefore, you get into this thing. Goolsbee calls it a puzzle. Kashkari's a little bit more worried about it. And as you said, Powell is kind of, I don't want to say doubling down, but more confident in his forecast that the decline in housing rents has to show up in the CPI. It is a puzzle, Scott. We don't know quite what's happening. We do know that market-based rents and other data from that have shown a decline. It hasn't shown up in the CPI. What we do know is that if you're going to get to 2% inflation, those housing numbers must come down.
Yeah, Steve, it was great stuff. And it's rare to have two presidents together live on television. Safe travels back. I appreciate you spending some time with us. Steve Leisman, our senior economics reporter.
Pleasure, Scott.
So
thank you.
Kevin Gordon, off the macro and back to the market. Do you believe that the trades that have worked this week, the sectors that have outperformed, as I said, utilities, financials, materials, industrials, are now the place to be? That the economy is going to remain good enough, and whether irrespective of what the Fed does down the road, that the market dynamic has shifted enough?
Yeah, we think it has. I mean, if you look at, even our sector model has a couple of those as outperformed: financials, materials, and then I would add it, energy. The move in utilities, I think if you were to take it back to what we had seen back in October, especially specifically for the utility sector, not only did you have it relative to the S&P 500 fall to a new all-time low, but in absolute terms, the sector itself fell to a three-year low. Highly unusual to see in a bull market, but that sector had gotten so deeply oversold, it's not a surprise to me to see the run that we've had since then. That being said, our view that the Fed is probably at this point not going to go into an aggressive cutting cycle, that they're probably going to take it slow, assuming the economy hangs in there, that's not consistent with utilities and traditional defensives continuing to outperform. So I would say that the cyclical bias is still there in terms of what we look for quality and everything that looks relatively strong, even in a higher rate environment.
All right, Bryn Talkington of Requisite Capital Management joins us, of course, a CNBC contributor. All right, so we're wrapping up this week, and we got above 5,200 on the close. We're not going to do a new high on the S&P today, it doesn't appear, barring something dramatic in the final 50 minutes or so that we have, because we need a 1% move from here. But how should we come away from this week thinking about this market?
I think that the S&P is going to be up about 2% this week. I think today you have a bit of profit taking going into next week's CPI. But I think this conversation around industrials, utilities, and AI, I think you have to throw the old cyclical playbook out, because they're all related. So we have this big AI spend that we get reaffirmation or confirmation from Meta, Google, Amazon, Microsoft, et cetera, Tesla, about the massive spend that they're going to continue to do. And where does that play into, actually? It plays into data centers, which plays into utilities. And so if you look at NextEra, NEE, I think it's up about 23% this year. That's a close to 15% of XLU. And then if you think about industrials, we're doing so much onshoring. If you look at what's happening with Intel, the CHIPS Act, IRA, et cetera, that's also to bring technology back onshore. And so I think you have these cross currents. And so I think it's really important for investors, that old playbook of when should you buy utilities? Because you would think that rates could actually on the back end start going up. That's not great for dividend yielding utilities. But you have this other aspect, I think, of energy spend around onshoring and data centers that's actually budding that and is a much bigger move that could help utilities be strong for the rest of the year.
See, that's an interesting play. And a lot of people are talking about that, Kevin, including, Carl Quintanilla, my colleague, posted on social media the conversation that he and Cramer had this morning about utilities, that they're no longer, at least now, a defensive play, but rather a generational growth story as the power-hungry data center drives upgrades to the grid. Is there something to that?
I mean, we do, I was thinking back to when Bryn was talking about that, when we wrote our outlook for 2024, we do have this view that, yes, in general, not just this year, but maybe you're at more of a secular turning point where the AI beneficiaries and the adopters maybe start to take, more of an importance in terms of market returns than just the creators. That being said, though, there's still enough from a fundamental perspective, especially where we are given rates, I think, to weigh down on utilities. Not that they have to go down, but I think in terms of relative performance, you look at the debt levels, the interest coverage ratio for that sector, it's not very high. It's actually rolling over. You also just look at the fact that for the sector as a whole, the dividend yield relative to what you earn in the bond market, that spread has been slipping. And now you're kind of into a zone that is consistent with weaker returns, not outright negative, but just weaker relative to history. So I do think that, yes, there's probably a secular story there, but I'm not sure, given where we are in a fundamental aspect and what the market's been focusing on in terms of quality, I'm not sure that that's a long-term play right now.
Bryn, financials, we're showing them on the screen, these week-to-date sector gainers. It's number two on the list. They've certainly done quite well. It's 11% year-to-date. It's one of the top-performing sectors in this market. What should we think about right now? Again, that feels like directly correlated to the fact that rates have come down. There's a better feeling about how this whole thing is going to end.
Yeah, so I mean, I've been, I think, really consistent. We are very underweight financials. We're like trying to be away from financials. I think there's better returns outside of a few individual names. I think that we could go into, when we look back at the end of the year, the Fed could actually lower rates on the short end, but you actually have an uninversion of the yield curve where the long end actually goes higher. And so, whereas the big banks can actually do some stuff with that, I still think with the long end, commercial real estate, mortgages are priced more on the long end, not the short end. And with the $1 trillion of refinancing on commercial real estate, I still have this unease that we have these landmines in the commercial real estate market and other areas that if you continue to get, once again, an uninversion, regardless of what the Fed does, that's going to put some pressure on some sectors that we're not ready within financials. And I think that probably brings most of them down with it if that occurs.
Yeah, you like financials, don't you?
Yeah, and I agree with Brent on if you start to break it up between large cap versus small cap.
I'm talking large cap. Let's talk large cap because, like, you know, Goldman Sachs has been hitting a new all-time high almost every day, and J.P. Morgan's been doing the same. I definitely think we need to separate the kind of conversation we're going to have. We're not talking, you know, regional banks out of the Russell 2000.
Right.
We're talking about large cap, either money center banks or, you know, capital markets focused banks, things like that.
Yeah, when we look at the factors that we use, whether it's quality, sentiment, growth, value, that sector scores pretty well. So for now, you know, it's worked, thankfully, you know, for us, knock on whatever here. But I think that you still have strong trends in place. The underlying breadth and internals of that sector are really strong. Financials is one of the S&P 500 financials, I should clarify, is one of the sectors that's scoring the best right now in terms of participation among its members.
Bryn, what about energy? Because I think we have some differing views of late. What's been a disappointing trade and shows fits and starts. Should we be believers in that? Asking somebody, of course, who's sitting in the Houston, Texas area and maybe a little biased. Just throwing that out there.
I mean, I'm fact-based. I'm boots on the ground, so I think I have a really good lens.
That's fair. That's fair enough.
Right?
Channel checks.
So I think other people are biased. and so I think that you're going to continue to have dispersion. I still like the smaller names. I mean, if you look at a Diamondback, I mean, that stock, if you took the name off, you would think that would be a technology stock. I think that, you know, 80 is the new 60. I think these companies in general have good capital discipline. The free cash flow yield isn't as good as it was last year. I think it's about 7% in aggregate. But I still like these names, like the Diamondbacks, those kind of names. We're playing it generally via RSPG, which is the equal weight. So I can get some smaller EMP names and not just sit there with Chevron and Exxon with XLE. But I think that this needs to be part of the portfolio. Also, energy does well in this kind of market when you're expecting rates to come down. Energy is one of the top performers. And I think energy's up about 11%, the ETF for the year. So it's been a really strong performer.
Yeah. Well, you know, over a month, it's been the worst performer. Energy, you like that too.
Yeah, you go through these fits and starts, but we take a longer term approach. If you extend it out over the past 3 years, even past 4 years, energy is still the dominant performer out of all sectors. So I think that, again, when you look at fundamentals, talk about a sector that looks a lot bit different than something like utilities, even in terms of interest coverage. You know, the profit boom for this sector over the past couple of years, notwithstanding the weakness that we've seen over the past year, has been enough to really lift that interest coverage ratio, keep it elevated, which is one of the reasons that we think areas like this can still do well, even with rates really elevated. Because, you know, we have to keep in mind, it's about risk appetite. It's not as much about the level of rates permanently affecting any given sector or any given company. Mm-hmm. If risk appetite comes back and you're able to withstand it, which a lot of energy companies have been able to so far, then that ultimately is a good thing, especially in a higher pressure economy, which we still seem to be in right now.
Bryn, let's finish by circling back to one of the areas of the market that's, you know, had a tough this week. And those are those high growth stocks, high beta stocks, like Roblox, for example, got crushed the other day. Yeah. We had you on halftime in which you said you were going to buy more soon. That time has come today.
Yeah, I mean, I added to Palantir earlier this week, very overblown. And I added to Roblox this morning. I think that I was originally said yesterday I was going to wait till Monday. But after the market, it seemed really washed out. And so I think that once again, this stock will see $40 again. It's in a really strong channel. The market overreacted to this. And so I think this is a good opportunity. I can buy it around 30, probably take profits on this piece around 40, you know, in the next 6 months to a year, which would be a great total return.
Yeah, getting a decent little move today. Bryn, thank you. I appreciate it very much. Bryn Talkington, Kevin Gordon, nice to see you as well.
Thanks, Scott. Good to see you.
All right, let's send it to Christina Partsenevelis now for a look at the biggest names moving into this Friday close. Christina.
Well, move over Tesla. Chinese EV maker Zeekr just IPO'd in the U.S. and shares are up 30% right now. Zeekr is backed by Chinese-based auto group Geely, offers several luxury EV models, and really opened up at $26 this morning. The Zeekr listing is the biggest by a Chinese-based firm in the United States since Didi back in 2021. Shares of the largest chip manufacturer in the world are also higher, but up just over 4% after reporting a 21% sequential monthly increase in April sales. That's 60% higher than last year at this time. Those big numbers driven by demand for AI products, standard server bills, stable demand from Apple, and we're starting to see the seasonal improvements in handset and PCs. Scott?
All right, Christina, thank you very much. Christina Partsenevelis. We're just getting started. Up next, growing pains. A number of high-profile growth stocks. We just mentioned one, like Roblox, getting hit this week. EMJ Capital's Eric Jackson. Well, he's been a big believer in that trade. Find out if he's still bullish or if the recent turbulence has him changing his tune. We're live at the New York Stock Exchange. It's Friday. You're watching Closing Bell on CNBC.
What does it mean to be rich? Maybe it's less about reaching a magic number and more about discovering the magic in life. At Edward Jones, our dedicated financial advisors are the people you can count on for financial strategies that help support a life you love. Because the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Learn more about our comprehensive approach to planning at edwardjones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
From pit lane to podium, the Las Vegas Grand Prix is providing fans a race day experience at the speed they deserve. With the help of T-Mobile for Business, our 5G advanced network solutions are powering race day operations with event-wide connectivity. From streamlined gate entry to an immersive app, giving fans blazing fast access to the sport they love. This is accelerating innovation. This is the Las Vegas Grand Prix with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Welcome back. Stock market heading for a positive week. A different story, though, for a handful of high-profile growth names. Roblox, Shopify, Uber, among the stocks down sharply since reporting earnings this week. A little bit of a recovery after that, but it's been a tough week. And our next guest says there's still more gas in the tank for that trade. Joining me now, EMJ Capital President and Portfolio Manager Eric Jackson. It's good to see you. Welcome back. It's been a while.
Hey, how are you?
I think that's the theme of this week, really, is a lot of the blow-ups that we had. I could, you know, six, seven, eight names really got hammered after their earnings just weren't good enough.
That's true. I mean, this is a market where you come up short, you're going to get punished. But I, you know, looking through those examples, I mean, I think there is some good news this week, Scott. AI, the big AI trade, you know, the names are much higher than they were a week ago. And Christina just mentioned it in the prior segment about the Taiwan semi news overnight and their April orders being up 60% year on year. So that's definitely helped those stocks. The Russell also is up just, you know, compared to a week ago. The VIX is down, 10 years sort of flat. Most tech names, most growth tech names, if you go back and look at the charts, bottomed in the third week of April. And so despite the bumpiness and the individual names, I still think that growth is on its way up from here, not down.
Why then did you exit out of Microsoft, Amazon, and Google? We could start there because that's what I see as part of your notes, that you recently got out of those stocks.
Yeah, after earnings. You know, I look at those are all great companies, and I think there's going to be opportunities to trade all the Mag 7 names throughout this year, including Apple and Tesla. I just thought they'd had great pops. There was good news. There was sort of pessimism going in. I decided to take profits. My two favorite names in the Mag 7 all year and continues to this day is Meta and Nvidia. I think those are the two, you know, solid holds for all of this year. The others, you know, some of them have stretched valuations. Some of them, the growth prospects aren't as great. I think there's, you know, opportunities to look elsewhere in some of the smaller names, you know, where the valuations aren't as stretched. There's sort of a growth story emerging. A lot of companies have cut headcount significantly, so they're much more profitable than they used to be.
NVIDIA, I mean, the earnings are looming large. Now we're going to have to wait 12 days or so before we get them. How important a moment is that going to be for the whole market?
It's the biggest name affecting the whole market. I mean, there's no one else bigger. If they tanked, if they stumbled, it would have profound impacts on other names and other sectors that are far away from AI. So there's no question that they're everyone's looking to them. The Taiwan Semi news, though, of today and just April sales being up sequentially 21% for them and AI chips being a big reason why, I think it, you know, goes back to the story of NVIDIA as really the core way to play AI. Despite the fact that they've had several good quarters to this point. And so I just don't think it's going to be a three-quarter and done story. I think it's a multi-year story, and NVIDIA is going to continue to move up from here.
So the top picks you have relative to AI, one of which, to be quite honest, I don't know that I've heard anybody talk about, maybe that's just me, maybe I just missed it, is Dell. Why so?
Yeah, Dell's reporting after NVIDIA. Should be later this month, Scott. And I think they've quickly emerged this year as sort of a stealth play in AI. Obviously, Supermicro got all the headlines a few quarters ago for building out the data centers that are wrapping the NVIDIA chips. But Dell is, you know, arguably doing just as good, if not a better job than Supermicro. We just heard all these the people like Amazon and Meta and Google on their earnings call kind of spooked the market because they talked about how they are not stepping back from AI spending. And that's good news for the Dells of the world. It's good news for the Supermicros and others. And so I just think Dell, there's obviously a consumer story, but the data center story, the AI story, is one that's picking up steam big time.
You like Arm Holdings too, right? They had earnings this week too, and the reaction wasn't great afterwards.
It wasn't. They bounced back today. They're up even more than Taiwan Semi today, I think, on Taiwan Semi's news. I think the results were better than kind of the first reaction. They've already kind of taken some pain going into the earnings event. So they're an AI story too. Obviously, they make the CPUs that power the AI data centers, but they've got a close relationship with NVIDIA. NVIDIA obviously tried to buy them a couple of years ago. And they've got a great management team. So I do think that they will continue to emerge as a very strong story going forward in the rest of this year. And as they roll out more and more chips, their royalty rates are a lot higher. So we'll see that play out in the story as well.
And you like one of, gosh, what's been one of the most turbulent stocks, I think, in this entire market over the last few years. That's Carvana. And maybe the story has turned. I don't know where the short interest is today relative to where it was before. My guess is it's not nearly as high as it once was. Why do you continue to believe in that name?
Well, it's been a binary story for well over a year, Scott. I mean, and most people who took the bearish side of it thought that this company was frankly going out of business. They thought the debt was going to crush this company. Obviously, the management team's done a great job of proving those skeptics wrong over the last year. And so now, as sort of the bankruptcy fears fade, the question is really like, how do I value this company? Is this, historically it's been a go-go growth story, but there have been no profits, no free cash flow. They've changed their tune now as they've gotten fit and gotten much more focused over the last couple of years. And so now the question is, can they walk and chew gum at the same time? Can they be a growth story and a profitable story, which they showed just in their last earnings report, that had jumped significantly? And if they can, people really will have to say, where does this deserve to trade from a multiple perspective? And assuming that they can continue to march up, they're not just a traditional car retailer like a CarMax. They've got this sort of well-known brand. They've got the e-commerce story. They didn't spend a lot on marketing in this past quarter, and yet sales jumped tremendously. So I still think there is gas in the tank for Carvana.
All right, Eric, I appreciate it. Enjoy the weekend. We'll see you soon. Eric Jackson. Coming up, the return of the Fed put. Ed Yardeni is back. He says that's back. And he says there's rising risk of a market melt-up as a result. I'm going to tell you the catalyst that could drive the rally from here. Makes his case after the break. Closing bell's back.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
Down the S&P in the green, heading back towards record highs. All three indices now on pace to notch their third straight week of gains. Investors turning their attention to next week's all-important CPI and PPI data. Joining us now, Ed Yardeni. He's the president of Yardeni Research. It's good to see you.
Thank you, Scott.
What a remarkable turn, huh? Since we're down 5% or so on the S&P, wondering whether we're going to have a 10% correction from there. And here we are, less than a percent away from another new record high. What should we make of this?
Well, it's clearly still very much of a bull market. I thought we could have a 5 to 10% correction. We had something a little bit over 5%. Looks like we're not going to have anything like 10%. I think what we make of it is that the economic outlook remains really quite positive. I think inflation is going to continue to moderate. I think the economy is going to continue to grow. And I think that means that earnings are going to continue to head up, probably not to a new high in the first quarter when all numbers come out. But I think over the next couple of quarters, we're going to make new record highs in earnings. So I see the market moving higher.
I mean, let's kick earnings around, if you would.
Sure.
Because I know where the outlook is, but if you look at what just happened in earnings season, and it's for all intents and purposes over, the growth was all from the mega caps. Right. I mean, what are we going to do? Less than 5% total earnings growth, maybe around 5. But the majority of that really came from a very, very select group of stocks. Why should we believe that that's going to turn?
Well, we are quite optimistic at overall corporate profits. Last year, they came in at $222 per share for the S&P 500. We're thinking 250 this year, 270 next year, and 300 in 2026. The reason for that is I think profit margins are going to continue to expand to all-time record highs. We have seen profit margins going up, and you're absolutely right. Some of that leadership and higher profit margins have clearly been from the mega cap names. But Scott, you know, it is what it is. I mean, we're talking about roughly 30% of the S&P 500 market cap being dominated by eight names, and they're not going away. And they're going to continue to be an important part of the market. We got a forward PE of about 21 with them, and we got a forward PE of 17 without them. So the market doesn't look cheap when you look at the overall market, but then you got to consider what you're getting for your money, and you're getting some pretty amazing companies.
What about the sector shakeup, if we want to call it that? This week is good evidence of it, right? The sectors that have done really well this week, and technology is not going to be mentioned by me, other than telling you that it's not in there. What do we make of that? Do you believe in this broadening finally and for good? Because I've asked you and others at times when we've broadened out and it's fizzled. Will it this time?
Well, I think part of the broadening issue has been that the mega cap eight, as I like to call them, I watch a lot of movies, so I'm throwing Netflix into the mega cap seven. And a lot of those stocks have really seen their stock price appreciation so great that by comparison, other stocks that are up maybe a piddling 20% since the beginning of the bull market don't look all that exciting. So a lot of the breadth issue has really been just a mega outperformance by the mega cap stocks.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm thinking like utilities this week, financials have done incredibly well. When you look at utilities, most people look at utilities, they say, well, it's a yield play. Right. You know, that's where it's defensive. Now I hear the overwhelming majority of people suggest now these are just more AI offense plays. And
absolutely.
Others would suggest, well, that's going to end in tears. Now we've taken right. utilities to the point of their AI plays, too.
Well, I think I mentioned to you before my pet thesis here is that all stocks are technology stocks. You either make technology or you use technology. If you don't do that, then you're out of business. You're going to be competed out of business by companies that are using technology or making it. And so, yeah, I think the market is actually broadening out in a way that makes a lot of sense to me. Utilities clearly are going to be big beneficiaries of tremendous demand for power to power the data centers and make this all work.
And the notion of, you know, what we heard today from the Fed speakers who are out in force, which certainly tilted a little more hawkish. Now, the Fed chair obviously didn't, or at least that's the read, assuming
right.
we're reading that correctly.
No, you're
what
got
you make
that
of
right,
that?
I think.
What do you make of that?
Well, look, I don't think the economy needs any change in rates. It certainly doesn't need rates to go up, and I don't think it needs the rates to go down. I think we've normalized interest rates. We're back to where interest rates were before the great financial crisis, before the great abnormal between the great financial crisis and the great virus crisis. So I'm very comfortable with the rates here. So the stock market seems to be very comfortable with it. I am concerned that the Fed might just take any bit of evidence that the economy is slowing and lower interest rates. And my concern would be that that would be too much of a good thing. We could have a melt-up situation in that scenario. So I'm rooting for things to pretty much remain even keel here. And I think that'll remain very positive for the market.
Are we giving too much credence to the notion that the consumer is just going to hang in there forever? Because the data this week was squirrely on that front. And if you put Starbucks, the recent earnings report, into the mix and some others, too, I'm not necessarily sure that we come away from all of that feeling great.
I think the consumer has got a lot of different stories in the consumer. It's not just one story. I think you've got a lot of baby boomers that are retiring, and the baby boomers have $75 trillion in net worth. It's the richest cohort of demographically that we've ever had, and they're spending money like crazy. They're going on tours, they're going to entertainment venues, they're going to restaurants, they're traveling, and they're going to the healthcare system, and that's creating a whole bunch of jobs in all those kind of services. On the other hand, you do have people that are struggling with consumer credit, and a lot of them are actually younger folks. And I think what we're missing here is there's a lot of intra-generational support going on, where the baby boomers, I think, are paying some of the credit card bills and some of the mortgage down payments for the younger generation. So I know this from a personal experience, Scott, but I also know it's from my friends.
All right, Ed, we'll leave it there, and we'll see you soon, I'm sure, of that. Ed Yardeni. Up next, we're tracking the biggest movers into the close. We're back to Christina. With that, what do we see?
Well, what does garlic, steak, and healthy greens have in common? Maybe, Scott, your dinner, or maybe a 30% stock surge. I'll explain next.
Well, we're less than 15 from the closing bell. Back to Christina now for a look at the key stocks we need to watch. Christina.
Well, it's all about guidance this earnings season, and that's why Akamai technology shares are getting punished today. The cloud company may have posted better than expected earnings, but warned of weak June guidance. The company is facing slower growth in media and gaming markets for its content delivery, and that's why shares are down 11.5%. Bring on the protein. Maybe for Scott's dinner, caramelized garlic steak coming to a sweet green menu near you, but shares are popping over what? 33% right now because the salad chain beat on earnings and also upped its full year revenue guidance. Scott, what's for dinner?
I feel like having carbs. Is that bad? It's not that bad, right?
No, it's not bad. It's Friday. It's loud.
Thank you. I'll let you know what I had on Monday. All right, still ahead. The big biotech bounce. Shares of vaccine maker Novavax soaring today. We'll drill down into what's driving that near triple digit surge. Look at that. 96%. Back on the bell after this. A reminder to tune in this weekend for a CNBC Changemaker special. You're going to hear from a number of women that are transforming business, including the WNBA commissioner and the CEOs of Fannie Mae and Amalgamated Bank. That's tomorrow. Saturday, May 11th, 5 p.m. Eastern time. Up next, a fast food inflation situation. McDonald's cooks up a plan to bring in more customers. Serve that up in the Market Zone next. All right, we're now in the Closing Bell Market Zone. CNBC senior markets commentator Mike Santoli here to break down the crucial moments of this trading day. Plus, Angelica Peebles on Novavax's huge rally today. Pippa Stevens on why McDonald's is popping as well. All right, we finished another week. We're not that far from a new record high either. How are we thinking about next week? Inflation, inflation, inflation?
Market has really pretty much done what you'd hope it to do. Off of that low 3 weeks ago, response to the oversold conditions, makes the most of a decline in Treasury yields. Very broad in terms of the number of stocks participated. We've talked about the financials and others that have done well. I do think it was interesting that the University of Michigan consumer sentiment numbers today kind of stopped the levitation that was kind of underway in the morning, put the market a little bit back on its heels, got yields firmed up a little bit. And all that says to me, because that's really a tertiary type indicator, that 1 year inflation expectations, it says we have the sensitivity to those inflation numbers. So we're not going to fully relax until we get through those and see if we're still on track to have disinflation resume or have it be a good enough number that, in fact, yields can stay calm.
All right. Angelica Peebles on Novavax, a near 100% one-day gain. Remarkable.
Yeah, Scott, Novavax is having its best day ever today, and that's after announcing a partnership with Sanofi to sell its COVID vaccine and develop combination shots like one for COVID and flu. Novavax will get $500 million up front and another $700 million if they meet certain milestones. The total could go even higher over time if the combinations pan out. J.P. Morgan's calling this deal transformational to Novavax's overall business. Remember, this is a company that about a year ago warned they might not be able to keep the lights on. Shares are about doubling today to about $9, but they're still down roughly 97% from their intraday high of $3.32 in February of 2021. And Novavax is still a favorite name to bet against, with short interest representing almost 34% of the float as of the end of April, per FactSet data. Scott.
Angelica, thank you. Angelica Peebles, you have a quick thought on here?
No, I'm just really glad we showed the multi-year chart there, because it's still down like 95% from the highs. But it does show you it was a one-third of the float was short before.
Look, it shows you sort of, you know, the post-COVID playbook for of these main names within that group. Pfizer, I think we're dealing with that. Moderna. Hardly
massive
ever talk
struggles.
About that stock, right?
And they don't really know the way out of it. In fact, I don't know if you mentioned it, but the FactSet numbers for the first quarter earnings growth would be much, much higher if not for big losses or write-offs from Pfizer and Bristol-Myers. So it's still kind of an overhang on the overall earnings picture.
All right, Pippa Stevens, McDonald's making some moves here. Tell us.
That's right, Scott. McDonald's is prepping a $5 value meal to bring customers back in this competitive environment. Two sources familiar told R. Kate Rogers it could include a McChicken or a McDouble with four-piece nugget fry and soft drink. Deal details are still being hammered out, and an initial proposal by McDonald's for the $5 value meal did not clear necessary hurdles, and additional details are now being discussed. One source said Coca-Cola added marketing funds to the equation to make the deal more appealing for owner-operators. Now, value remains key in this environment. McDonald's has leaned into core items that have done well with consumers, but this value meal would be substantially lower than ordering those items individually. That stock's got up nearly 3%.
All right, Pippa Stevens, thank you so much. We've got 90 seconds, Mike. Great week for financials.
Yeah.
Great week for utilities. And pretty spread out throughout. It's been a nice broad week.
It has. I think one of the factors that's been driving a lot of what's gone on the last few weeks, we talked about this even going back to February, was the extreme outperformance of high momentum parts of this market really looked vulnerable for reversal. Well, that reversal has largely happened. And so the high momentum areas of the market, semis and others, have backed off. But what happens there is you get the low momentum washed out parts of the market benefiting, because essentially the quantitative trade just work in reverse. And I think that's a big part of what's going on with utilities, a little bit with staples that have acted a bit better too. And the glaring piece of this, which keeps me from saying, oh, we're seeing a broadening of the market because we have a better macro picture, is the consumer cyclicals. Because you still have just a little bit of pressure on the whole storyline about whether the consumer is going to be resilient for all the reasons we've been talking about. So, you know, the market has kind of like gotten itself into this neutral spot, almost back to the highs, no longer overbought or oversold, right into point to this big data week. Macro's going to pick up next week.
All right, you have a great weekend.
You as well.
That's Mike Santoli. Thank you. Everybody at home, please do the same. But not until overtime plays out. We go there now with Morgan Brennan.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.